Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars, learning that Star-Lord with idiots.
Hello, and welcome to Star Wars Lore with Idiots, the show where one man tries to teach a bunch of idiots Star Wars lore without force-choking them. With that, let's turn it over to our lore master, Ranger J 1999, and the buffoons, Rambam 001, Karth, and Kashmir.
Hey, welcome back to another Star Wars Lore with Idiots. Glad to have you guys here. The show where yours truly, Ranger J 1999, your lore master, tries to teach a bunch of idiots Star Wars lore, and it usually goes tits up. Glad to have you guys here. Welcome to this series that we're putting together that we're eventually going to be putting on podcasts like iTunes, things of that nature. But we got to hit our goal for that. And if we can get to our patrons, which is slowly creeping up, it's getting there. It's getting there. And we are going to make a big push this week. I'm going to do a big long stream to see if we can get patrons over $1,000 or higher. So that way we can start doing those things that you guys want. To expand the show into other formats besides just YouTube, which we'll still do, but then I can upload it to Podbean, iTunes, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that way you have different platforms that you can listen to and we can spread the love. That being said, we usually start these, you know, we'll introduce everybody what we're drinking, if we are drinking, because I definitely need bourbon when we're doing these things. And then we'll get into our topic. It's going to be a little different on how we get to top, because this is a continuation of the last lore video we did, which was introducing everybody to the Sith and getting into the history of the Sith. That being said, let's meet the idiots. And we can start by our first idiot up the bat is Kashmir. Kashmir, how are you doing today?
Hello. Doing good.
Doing good. Drinking anything today? I know it's early afternoon when we record these, but you sipping on anything?
I am slowly sipping.
Slipping on something, huh?
On a little Basil Hayden.
There you go. Very nice. Yeah, I'm just doing a little bit of Williams today. I'm not going too fancy myself. Ram, what are you doing? Anything? Sipping on anything? Or just, you know, sobering it up a little bit today on the lore video?
No, I'm sipping on some Elijah Craig. Hopefully it'll tone down the issue we're gonna have next few hours. Yeah, with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I know. We're recording this just right before the Cowboys game. No. And then last but not least, the man that brings it all together, the willing cannoneer himself, Karthrick, is here.
What's up? How is doing?
I know you're not drinking. It's way early in the morning for you there.
I mean, you know, it's a little early, but, you know, if something splashed in my coffee, something splashed in my coffee.
Hey,
you know,
it just happened.
Yeah, yeah.
It happened.
Yeah, you know. I hadn't had my coffee yet,
so my hands were a little shaky. You know, something might have spilled off the countertop and got into my cup. I don't know. Tastes great. That's all I know.
Less filling. All right. Now, normally,
a little bit of RDCD will fix that.
That's right. So this is a continuation with the lore video. Now, I want to say that with the Patreon stuff, and if we do hit it this week, the next lore video will be, hopefully soon, Ram will be the Lord Master. I get to pretend to be the idiot, and he's going to teach us all about Mace Windu.
Pretend.
Yeah.
It's going to be scared.
Yeah. So it'll be a new thing. I'm just going to hit record and let Ram take over, and that should be horrifying for anybody watching this. So that'll be the thing. But yeah, usually we start this with like a quote, or, you know, something, or I let them guess like what the topic's going to be, but that's counterproductive because although they are idiots, it's not hard to guess that we already know what the subject is. So that's right out the window. So, so let's recap. You know what? I know where we're at. Who wants to tell us? We did cover the Sith last time, but what do you guys remember? Where did we end up last time? Let's see if anybody remembers. That ought to be a good way to go. Who wants to try to take a stab at the dark of where we ended the last lore video?
Sith were fighting Sith.
Sorta. That's not wrong. Yeah.
It happens all the time. That's probably the closest shot we could get.
Yeah, yeah. Anybody else want to add on to Karth's generalized answer there?
The Sith were taking over something.
Again, another good general answer. Sith do that. Yes. Ram, anything you want to add on to this spiciness?
The Sith hated somebody else.
Yeah, these are all answers from last time. Yeah. Not wrong, but not very productive to where we're trying to do. So anyway, so when we left off, we just left off with Nar Sedai, or not Sedai, Freeda Nod, and everything that had kind of gone on there. We kind of left some things ambiguous. The reason we're doing that is because we're getting to two major characters, and some major factions, because we got into everything that went on with Freeda Nod. I kind of ended it generally like he gets defeated, blah blah blah. And we're going to talk about two major characters here, Exar Kun and Ulic Keldroma. And they are leading into our big topic for today, which is the Great Sith War. Some call it the Second Great Hyperspace War, but, you know, it's known by as the Great Sith War. And, you know, it's interesting. Exar Kun, and as much legends and lore that is on this, these two characters, kind of a forgotten major Sith. He's a big one to cover. He does some crazy stuff. My goal was to get into them, cover their story, and then get into the Old Republic timeline from the games with Vitiate. And then I got into this, and as I told everybody before, now, Karth, I know this is one of your big ones. You definitely like Ulic Keldroma. I know you've mentioned him before, so you got to know something.
Yes. It's been a hot minute. I mean, I know of the Ulic Keldroma and Exar Kun. I think the first thing I got from them, I think, was during the playing KOTOR and stuff like that, and getting back into the old, because they had a lot of references to that time frame. Yeah, my brain is not functional yet, and I'm only dampening that with the spirit. So I'm gonna need a refresher.
Ram, Kashmir, have you guys heard of these characters before? Before we delve into this lore,
As somebody who played a lot of SWTOR, I've heard the names. I'm not super familiar on the history, the lore of these characters, but I have heard the names.
Kaz, are you just complete blank slate right now?
I've heard the names, but I'm just hoping somehow he looks like a raccoon.
Why?
Exar Kun, hoping somehow like a raccoonish, like he's got circles on his eyes or something like that. That'll be cool.
What?
He's going with Kun for literal. Show me Kun.
Let's not make that. Let's not say that ever again. And now I'm just gonna, yeah. K-U-N, Kun. Yes, yes. That kind. Oh
yes.
God. There went the monetization for this video. Once again, I make nothing doing this. Thanks, guys. You guys are great. What a great guy. Oh boy. Yeah, now I have to say Exar Kun every time because of dumbass Kashmir. Horrible. Oh my god. Okay, let's get into this. Now we're going to be jumping all over the place because we've got to cover three main factions. We've got to cover our three main storylines here. Exar Kun's own storyline, Ulic Keldroma and Nomi Sunrider story, and then the Crash Knights. We'll get into that. But they all have their own separate storylines, but they all come together for the Great Sith War. Okay? So let's start with Exar Kun. All right? Now, we've been down this road before. Tell me if you heard this one before. Exar Kun, it's like we've always said before, guess what he was? He was a pupil of Jedi Master Voto Siosk Boss, along with his other apprentices, Cathar Jedi Credo and Silvar. Now, there's a lot of parallels, and there's a lot of parallels for each of these Sith characters. Former Jedi, they fall to the dark side. It's the way it goes. Now, Exar Kun, like Freeda Nod centuries before, was extremely talented with the Force. Some of you have not heard this before. Because of his abilities and how powerful he was and how good he was extremely arrogant. And it made him believe that he was not only worthy of special teachings, but he believed that he could, unlike anybody else, he could be powerful in the light side and study and learn and use the dark side. And because of this, he became consumed by the idea that he could research not only Sith teachings, their histories, and their powers, but he was he believed, you know, the narcissist that he was, that he could do this and not be corrupted by the dark side. Oh, yeah, that usually does not go well. And this started him down the path of studying and using some of the forbidden Sith holocrons that the Jedi had. And this was all taking place on Datooine. So he started doing all this research and things of that nature. Now, this leads him, again, his arrogance. And he had every right to be cocky, but he went beyond that. There's cocky and belief in yourself, and then there's just straight up, you're a narcissistic asshole, and that's what he was. Now, during one of the training sessions, after he started doing all this studying, which he was kind of frowned upon, but the Jedi were like, oh, you know, he's just trying to learn. Knowledge is knowledge. But, you know, it led to an event where during a training session with his master master students, you know, they're all doing a sparring session. He's fighting Kratos, easily wins. And then Master Boss says, Silvar, get in there and duel him. Now, Exar, at this point, becoming really arrogant, started taunting Silvar and just being a total dick. You know, saying stuff that non-humans were basically inept, they were unworthy, you know, and just pissing her off. And so they start dueling again. And he's winning most of this duel, but she gets really angry. And Kethar, you know, they're kind of like cat people, slashes him across the face and injures him. And this sends Exar Kun into a kind of a berserk rage, and he starts just attacking her relentlessly, beating her down, and is getting ready to kill her when Master Boss steps in. And Master Boss didn't have a lightsaber. He had his walking stick. He used his walking stick, and then he dueled Exar Kun. And although he was using a walking stick, he gained the upper hand easily, and he would have won had Kratos not thrown his lightsaber so Kun could use two during the duel. And Kun basically was able to defeat Boss, but he was using two lightsabers versus a walking stick. Didn't kill him, didn't kill anybody. But at this point, XR is just like, you know what? I just beat my master. I'm awesome. I'm now a Jedi Knight. And he left Datooine for knowledge and secrets of the Sith. And you see the parallels kind of the same way that went on with Freedon Nod, you know. Now, from here, at the same time that this is going on, you have the events that go on in Onderon. We talked about Freedon Nod and the lineage he had created with the monarchy there. And so at the same time that all the fighting's going on in Onderon, remember, the queen had called in the Jedi. They were having this big civil war with the Beast Riders. All the events I kind of talked about previously were going on right at this time. And this is where Exar Kun goes. Now, this, for Exar Kun's story, this takes place right after the events of Onderon. The queen, the king, Nod were defeated. Their bodies are put on the moon of Dexan. And that's where Exar Kun goes. And he runs, of course, into, who else? Freedon Nod. And he encounters the spirit in the tomb. Nod says he's going to go with him, and he encourages him, like, we need to go to Korriban. We need to go to the Sith homeworld. If you want some knowledge, we need to go there. That's where Kun starts. Exar Kun goes to Korriban with Freedon Nod. We're going to get back to that story in a second, because now we have to get into the other two sides of this. We got to get into the next group of folks that we need to talk about that ties in with Ula Kul Droma and some minor stuff. So at this point, I get worried because I'm going to open it up for questions. And I just have a bad feeling about this, but we'll see. All right. Who's got questions, comments, anything? I'm cringing right now.
I'm just impressed that the dude was able to take XR Kun on with the walking stick. I mean, was it a best car walking stick or
no? Just a like normal old wooden stick.
Yeah.
There's actually there's a picture in the Jedi versus Sith source book that has a picture of that. I'll include that in the stuff that I usually put pictures and stuff when we're doing this, when I go back and cut everything, and I'll show a picture of that. But yeah, it's pretty dope that he was that much of a match. I mean, XR Kun is a phenomenal lightsaber, and you'll see that when we get into more of where he goes. But yeah, his master was pretty dope.
So was it like a hardwood walking stick or like a softwood?
It was it was more of a pine. I don't know. It was a stick. It was a stick.
Did it have like a James Bond aspect? You know, like this, like
yes, it had exploding
like
darts.
Out, like, lightsaber bolts
or something. It was I mean, it had an ejector seat. Shut up, Brian.
I mean, they do have wood in Star Wars lore that is resilient to the energy of a lightsaber. So, you know, possibilities.
Yeah. They don't say what his damn stick was made of, just the fact that he was using his walking stick to fight XR Kun. And I think that's the main point here.
I don't know why he
really want to know more about the stick.
I don't know why XR walked away from that fight thinking that he was all that. Like, the
he
guy
was already,
was
you're, you was thinking of that. Yeah, he was full of
I know, but he was getting himself. Held off by a stick.
I know.
He's as good as my dog right now.
Narcissist, man. What can you do? That's what he did, man. He was he's an asshole. What can I say? There's not a lot of redeeming qualities at XR Kun.
No, doesn't appear to be that way.
It really isn't. I mean, he is, yeah. His abilities have made him quite cocky. I mean, don't get me wrong, XR is one of the most powerful Sith ever. And for a reason, he was exceptionally powerful in the Force. There's going to be another fight that comes in the future with him where we'll get to, and you're going to be like, he did what? So, yeah. Now, any other questions before we move on? Because we got to get to the other sides of the other people that are going to be involved in the Great Sith War, especially on the bad side. So we're going to change gears and get into the other part of the duo story, and we're going to get into Ulic Queldroma. And he was part of the fighting that went on the uprising of Alderaan, and he was alongside with Nomi Sunrider. Now they were lovers. They had a relationship. She was the senior, and there was a reason why Nomi was always about the commander for overall stuff, but Ulic was a commander on the battlefield, but they made a great pair. But they were lovers. They had a relationship, and we'll get into that later, but it was what tied those two together. But before we can talk about them, we have to go talk about the Krath Society. Probably not heard of this before, but this was a society started by Satal and Alimo Kido. And these guys were both cousins and royal heirs to the Tetant monarchy. And alongside their friends, they started the Krath Society, and their purpose was, and this is on Course Major where this happened, the purpose of the group was to research the Sith and their ancient empire and to understand it. They had heard of the Great Hyperspace War. They were fascinated by the dark side. They weren't Jedi. They were just two bored, you know, royals looking for something to do, and this fascinated them. So this consumed them, and so they started looking for anything they can get their hands on. And so the two of them actually went to Coruscant, and they visited the main museum there. They had an exhibit of stuff from the war, the Sith Empire. It had artifacts and everything. They noticed that one of the things that was on display was a Sith spellbook, and so the two hatched a plan, and they stole the book. And it was a Sith sorcerer spellbook called The Dark Lords of the Sith. So they stole this book. Problem is, neither of them could read ancient Sith. So they're like, well, what do we do? At the same time that this is going on, they steal this book from the museum. Everything kicks off on Alderaan. They hear about Freedon 9 and all these dark side users and everything that was happening on the planet of Alderaan. They're like, You know, we're looking at the HoloNet. We're looking at the news. That's where we should go. So they travel to Alderaan in search of someone who could give them, that could either translate the book for them or would know of a way to be able to translate the book. Now, from here, we have to get back to Alderaan because these two knuckleheads decide that they're going to go to Alderaan. So they get a ship and they head Alderaan. Now, at the same time this is happening, this is where the big fighting breaks off on Alderaan between the Beast Riders, the people that were trying, that were being oppressed by the monarchy, you know, of the Nod that it created. So you had the two sides, the Dark Side and the Beast Riders, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes on there, but they're basically, they're fighting. Now, Nomi Sunrider, this is where we kick their story off. They had gone to Alderaan with a battle group of Jedi and Republic forces to support the, basically the good guys, the Beast Riders, and the people that were resisting. The reason Nomi Sunrider is famous, she's the first one that uses this, and this is what made her so potent. She was really strong in the Force, but she was the first one that used battle meditation. Battle meditation is an ability that allows a Jedi to link their minds and act as one with all the other Jedi on the battlefield. It's really a potent ability. And this is what made her so effective and made her so effective in the conflict. And they turned the battle of the conflict once they got there and started doing this. Just as the big stuff is starting to pop off, who shows up at that time? Well, the two royal knuckleheads. They go in, they're warned, don't go there because there's a lot of fighting going on and blah, blah, blah. They ignore that. They try to land on the planet. Their ship gets shot down. They survive the crash. They make it to the main capital. They're able to get in touch with the Dark Side cultists there, and then they find King Omen, who we talked about, the previous one that had been consumed by the Dark Side and was used in his spirit space. He's using an exoskeleton to live, and he's like, well, I don't know how to translate this, but I can give you the Sith amulet, which should be able to help you, and it did. What it did is the Sith amulet granted them the ability to finally be able to read the spell book. The only thing Omen wanted in return was, just them to use it and go forth and conquer. Right when he did that is when, in the story, Ulic, along with the Jedi and the Republic forces, storm in. Those two have to run for their lives, and they are saved by Freedon Nod, who helps them escape. But this is where King Omen dies, because that's when Ulic comes in there and they fight and he kills him. And he's also betrayed by Freedon Nod because he was like, well, you're useless now. I'm not going to help you. So Omen was kind of left on his own, and Ulic, being the great warrior that he is, goes in there and fights Omen. And Freedon Nod's watching this, and just before he lets Omen die, he looks at Ulic, Khal Drogo, and says, yeah, you've won this fight. Great job. You're going to become a great Sith one day. Of course, Oral looks like, whatever, bro. Whatever, but Freedon disappears and helps the other two escape. So we got the crash, and then there's going to be more of them. So this is where everything starts happening. You got the stuff going on with Exar. He's off going to Korriban. You got the two royal potato heads doing their stuff with the Sith book. And now you've got Ulic being and Nomi being pulled in the story. We take a pause. We ask questions from the idiots. What do you... But where are we at, guys?
So was all this taking place before the Death Star destroyed Alderaan?
Yes.
You're not even on the right planet, man.
I kept saying Alderaan.
Onderaan.
Oh, Onderaan. You said Alderaan.
No, I didn't.
I heard Alderaan.
You heard what you thought you heard. This is why you're fair.
These are completely different parts of the galaxy, bud.
And timelines. Just throwing that out there, too.
I did get a new topic, though, for next time, for a suggestion. It does sound like we need to explore the news network of the Star Wars timeline, like a newscaster, stuff like that.
It's a real thing. The HoloNet is a big deal in Star Wars. It really is.
They had their own Ted Koppel or...
Oh, yeah, man, they had all that stuff. I mean, and it was propaganda, but I mean, it was... was the HoloNet, it was like... The HoloNet went galaxy-wide, and you had the news, of course, that went through there, right? But you also had shows, sporting activities that you could watch. It's kind of like, you know, what we use for our internet and stuff. They had a long time ago in Star Wars where we did.
Yep. So it really seems like the events around Exarchun, Yoklodroma, Naomi Sunrider, all these characters, all of them, it's just like a big old case of serendipity.
It really is. They are all just like together, man.
Just by happenstance. It's like they chose to go to one place. The same time somebody else chose to go to one place. The same time somebody else fled to the same place. Just like, my God, the Force is just like, dance, puppets, dance.
Well, it's really Frieden Nod in what he did that led to all this happening. He causes the conflict. That brings in the Jedi. He meets up with Exarchun and starts, you know, doing what he's supposed to do to help facilitate the next generation of Sith. And at the same time, these two royals decide that they're going to get involved too, and they get involved in a big way. So Frieden Nod's the one that's doing stuff with Exarchun. He's helping the Alima and her cousin do their thing. He's oaxing on telling Ulic, you know, hey, you're going to be a Sith. I'm just warning you. And, you know, so yeah, it's really Frieden that's really the link for all these. Because of the things he does, he just ties these people in together. So if you want to say there's one thing, and you can say it's the dark side of the Force will or whatever you want to call it, it's the main catalyst. So any other not smart observations from the peanut gallery, the idiots? No? Okay, let's move on. Okay, now we need to go back to the craft kids. That's what I like to call them. So those, and they're very young. They're like 19, 20 years old. They're really young. So using the Sith artifact, it helps them with the spirit of Nod become adept in Sith sorcery. So they spend a little time learning this and learning Sith sorcery, which gives them a lust for power. And they took this opportunity to become the new rulers of the Corus sector. And their parents, the king and queen, they waited till they were, you know, to tour in a facility. You know, they were very industrial and went to a carbonite plant. And this is where the two use their sorcery to do the coup to kill the guards and escorts. They get, you know, the guards, their royal entourage is going with them. They use Sith sorcery to basically, you know, turn people's weapons to snakes and do all this crazy stuff and basically incapacitate or kill the guards and everything like that. But these two were ruthless. Once they did that with their followers, the crowd followers, they tied up the king and the queen, put them over a molten pit of carbonite, and had them plunged into it. Thus becoming the new rulers of the core sector, which that's did odd. Not that you're not wrong. So that they consolidated their power and they started and began what was known as the Krath Holy Crusade, which was perfect time because you just had all the Republican Jedi doing all the crap on Onderon, and they were right for this sector was right for the plucking. Now, they had control of the system, but one problem that they did not have is they did not have control of Corus Major, the main planet. Now, the usurp of the king and queen and what happens caused the Jedi and the Republic, like, oh, Christ, here we go again. And who are they going to send? Well, they're going to go send the heroes of Onderon, of course, with their fleet and task force. And that would, of course, be Nomi, Sunrider, and Ulic. With their forces to help the people of Corus Major fight off this coup. So they get organized. Just as their fleets get there, their fleets arrive at the same time that the Krath forces and the resistance of Corus Major were in heated battle, and the Krath fleets were bombing the planet at the time. So they engage, and Alima used Sith sorcery to cause illusion and cause chaos in Ulic's fleet because he's the first one that goes in. However, Nomi, using battle meditation, because she has that ability, saw through it and was able to stem the tide of the battle. But because of all the chaos and everything that she was causing with Sith sorcery, something they had not encountered before, even though she was able to keep forces in line, it wasn't enough. And with the numbers being equal on both sides, it was the advantage that the Alima needed to have her forces start doing suicide runs and doing all kinds of stuff. And unfortunately, the Republic forces lose and they have to pull back. And in the fighting, Uluk gets severely injured and they have to pull back. They just can't overcome this. Even with battle meditation, she can talk to the Jedi and coordinate, but she can't help, you know, the other people in the fleets that are seeing crazy stuff and going mentally insane, you know, from everything that they're seeing with all the illusions that she was doing. And so Republic forces pull back, and unfortunately the Krath win. They were able to take over the planet. And this caused the Jedi and the Republic to take action after this. Because of the massive losses, they decide, the Jedi especially, to discuss the Krath threat. And they're starting to sense a growing dark side shadow that's starting to build. They don't know what it is, but they say, let's come together. And they go to a planet, Denebah, to do this. However, the Krath, being the Krath, get wind of this. And they set up a plot to destroy the Jedi. And this is set up by Satal, the other of the two cousins, to take on the Jedi and Denebah. So any questions about the Krath revolt, the coup, anything like that?
I just find it infinitely interesting that the Sith have like tiers of power, mm-hmm. like versus like the Jedi, who is like, they just have force abilities, where the Sith are like, well, we have Sith sorcery, and then we have Sith alchemy, and then we have our force powers. And this is like, it's crazy to think that, like, you know, they're all kind of tied together to a degree, but it's crazy to think that it's just like, they're just sitting over there like, we've had no training, but we've read a book and it says, say, ooh la la, and all of a sudden, blast the snakes.
That's what the Sith did. I mean, so each side had their advantages, right? So the Jedi could do stuff that was more defensive in nature, right? So mm-hmm. if you look at stuff like battle meditation, the stuff that they could do in the Force, had its advantages, but the Sith had the other side of it, right? The dark side led the stuff that was unnatural. The Jedi had stuff that just hyped them in battle, you know, it's for defense. And so, yeah. And it really wasn't the Jedi in the battle that were affected. The Jedi were fine, but I don't care how coordinated you are with battle meditation. When you got everybody screaming that they got blood coming out of their, you know, dropping on them, and snakes are eating their arms, you know, you're not going to be able to, you know, there's only so much the Jedi could do. They could see through it. The other forces couldn't. So that's why you had the ships crashing into one another and the chaos that ensued from that. That's why the Sith, this is the first encounter, were so effective, these two, Alima and Satal, because they were, especially Alima, she was really good at this, of just causing pandemonium, and they were just not prepared for that. You know, they were able to not get totally wiped out, and they did some good damage to the Krath forces, but they couldn't overcome that. So that's why the heavy losses were happening on the Republic side. Mm-hmm. All right, anybody else?
So the Sith basically used LSD on their opponents.
Pretty much, yeah. That's a great way of looking at it. I mean, they were tripping balls, dude.
And therefore, the reason why Obi-Wan didn't like death sticks.
That's right. Oh, well, you thought that the Sith did the same shit in the first Great Hyperspace War. The Jedi were able to see through it, but what the Sith had done previously is, instead of using like illusions to against their opponents, they made their forces look bigger and create, like, you know, ghost armies and things of that nature, where it's like the Republic forces were in disarray because they would see all these forces and didn't know what to do, and then they would attack like, wait, nothing's happening, what the hell is going on? And the Jedi eventually saw through it and were able to overcome it. But this was a new kind of thing that they were just not aware of, where these people were being affected on a massive level with the crazy shit that they were seeing and going through. I mean, it felt real, right? So this was a new thing. And this is, you know, many, many centuries after the first war. So there you go. Now we got to go back to Exar Kun. He finally arrives on Korriban and he started exploring Korriban along with the spirit of Nod. However, Nod understood where Exar Kun was trying to go, and he was like, that's bullshit. You cannot be a master of the light side and in the dark side without giving into the dark side. The dark side, he's like, either you go in all out of the dark side or you don't. And Exar Kun gave him the middle finger, says, I will prove you wrong. So Nod's like, okay, cool. So he sets Exar Kun up easily. He leads him to one of the abandoned Sith, temples, where they're tombs, and he causes an avalanche to fall on Exar Kun. Now, Exar Kun is crushed underneath this rubble. He's using the Force to sustain himself. The pain that he feels actually reaches out to his former master, who reaches out to him, try to help him, but can't. And he can feel the pain of Exar Kun. And what Nod is doing here is he's trying to use the fear and pain that Kun's going to, that he would fully embrace the dark side. And unfortunately, Exar Kun's Jedi Master is not able to save him here, and he does go fully into the dark side. He heals himself, fully embracing the dark side. And so now he's on the path to the dark side, which is what Nod wanted. But Exar Kun is still under the illusion that he still can still control this, that it's not going to control his destiny. But not satisfied with the results of this. He's like, okay, if you really want to see if you can do this, then all right, youngster. He's like, you're going to have to go to Yavin 4, where he said he would learn and complete his training. And Exar Kun, being the narcissistic asshole that he is like, sure, I'll go there and I'll prove to you that I can do it. Now, at the same time, on Denba, the Jedi were having their kind of assembly. They feel, because Boss is one of the Jedi there, they all feel what happens to Exar Kun. That worries them, because they feel him, one, his pain and suffering, and then they sense him fall to the dark side. That's how powerful Exar Kun was. So they're like, okay, shit, we got to go deal with that, but we still got to deal with the craft. So they're coming up with a way, and they're having debates about what their next course of action. And of course, this is when the craft strike, because they don't want to have the Jedi getting their shit together. They knew the location, so they snuck in one of their ships into the system. And without warning, they suddenly launched a large scale attack. What they did is they dropped a ton of pods from the ship that landed on the planet, and these were craft battle droids, and they were designed to kill Jedi, and they did kill many Jedi. So they lanced all around the Jedi to pandemonium, the Jedi prevailed, but they took some losses here, and one of the losses was, of course, one of the Jedi that was killed was Ulic's former master Arca Jeth, and this really sets Ulic down the path to the dark side. He wants revenge immediately. And of course, he's like, I'm going to get revenge. The Jedi are like, no, that's not our way. Don't do that. Don't give in to your hate and stuff. Yeah, it sucks. We'll fight the fight. Don't do that. Ulic's like, you know what? I'm sick of you guys. And because he wants action. And he's a man of action. So he wanted revenge. So he formulates a plan to destroy the craft from within. And he does this by, he cuts off all contact from the Jedi. He's like, I'm done with you guys. And he heads across space. And what he wants to do is he wants to infiltrate them. And so he gets there and he's captured. He goes in front of Alima first. And he convinces her that he has fallen from the order. He's done with them. He's sympathetic to their cause. She believes him. The Tal was not buying his shit for a moment and had him imprisoned and then started torturing him. And this is where Ulic starts his journey to the dark side. Right then and there. On top of his need for revenge, his hatred and stuff. He doesn't know who in the craft was responsible for his master, but he's going to find out. And so backfires a little bit because he's tortured. He falls to the dark side. And then Satil, once that's done, it's like, okay, I can trust you enough. I'll make you a warlord. Prove to me, keep proving that you can do this. But he gets out of jail. At the same time, of course, Nomi, being the lovers of Ulic, he disappears for months. And she's like, what the hell? And he didn't even tell her plan. So she goes, eventually finds him on, Chorus, and is and plans a rescue mission. And when she arrives, they meet up and he says, look, I'm sorry, but I'm going to maintain my cover. I'm going to find out and get revenge. During this, she gets captured temporarily by Satal. She escapes before she can get off planet with her forces. She's confronted by Satal, who meets up with her. And then Ulux rides at the same time. And the reason he comes there is because Alima, Sith, they're all schemers. It told him that it was Satal who had planned and executed the attack on Dennebah. So Satal goes there to kill Nomi, right? Backfire because Ulux shows up, confronts him about that. They fight. He kills Satal. And through his anger and rage, he finally fully succumbs to the dark side. Nomi tried to stop him from doing it. She wasn't able to. She's not able to stop Ulux from doing what he does. And then she has to get out of Dodge, the Jedi, to get her out of there. Because they're like, you can't save him. He's to the dark side. And he now takes the place of the right-hand man of Alima. And she gives him the Sith amulet that they have been using as a reward for him now being there. Alima didn't like Satal now, and Satal didn't like Alima. They're always scheming in the Sith. And so now Ulux becomes her right hand, basically commander, general, that kind of stuff. All right. Any questions? No, we're going to move on.
No,
it's a lot, it's man. Just, this is all shit. It's tied together, man.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see kind of how, like, the smallest of events can really spark a downward spiral if you don't, like, do anything different about it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to hear all that kind of just going downhill in a hurry.
Well, and the reason you got to cover both their stories is because they both go different paths to get to the dark side, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exar Kun is just power. He just wants power. Like, Ulux is one of those tragic heroes where he's fighting the good fight, but to do it, he's doing things that he knows he shouldn't be doing, and it leads him to a path to fall to the dark side. Exar Kun just saying, but he's so arrogant and cocky, he thinks, like Ulux, you can use the dark side and you'll be fine. You're not going to corrupt us. They both have that same thought, but their paths, which leads them together eventually here. But they had different reasoning of how they fell to the dark side, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, which is good because the beginning of Exar Kun's story sounds like the beginning of every Sith story that we've had up until this point,
yeah.
Where Ulux is kind of like, his pain twists his ambition, which then he sacrifices more than just, you know, himself to accomplish his goal, where Exar Kun just is like, well, I can get it, so I'm going to go get it.
Yep.
So, all right, you do you.
So nice. All right, Ram, Cash, you guys are quiet. Any thoughts, questions, anything? Not about sticks?
Oh, not about sticks, then no.
All right, Christ. All right, moving on. All right. All right, we get back into Exar Kun, and he gets the Yavin 4. And again, not send his ass up again, but Exar Kun's being too cocky and arrogant to think that anything was going to be different. And nods now, I'm going to determine to show him that he's wrong and make him fully embrace the dark side. So Exar Kun arrives on the planet. He gets captured immediately by the Masasi warriors there because, you know, they're still around. And they capture him, beat the shit out of him. He's about to die because they're just, you know, and they've got their own, you know, dark side priests, and he's about to die. This is what Nod wanted, you know, like, okay, you think you can resist fully embracing the dark side? Prove it. And so Exar Kun fails miserably. His anger and his power gets fully unleashed here. He grabs an amulet from the main priest of the Masasi, and like a scene from, you know, what is it, Starkiller, where you see all the stormtroopers turn to ash.
That's kind of what happens.
Get vaporized.
Yeah.
And then he looks at Nat, and he's fully embracing the dark side. He's like, you did this. You wanted me to embrace the dark side? You got it. And obliterates Nat. I mean, immediately uses the dark side to destroy Nat. But Nat, before he goes, sends a warning out to, because he still had contact with Alima and Satal. And he warns Alima and Ulux, like, uh-oh. Before I go, just want to let you know, we got a new baddie coming. And oopsie. that they had a big problem with Exar Kun. Exar Kun just enslaves the Imbasasi, they bow down to him because he's now the new most powerful Sith, you know, now. Starts, he gets everything set up on Yavin, takes a month or two, gets organized, and then finds out, you know, he checks the news and he sees what's going on with the, he finally learned what's happening with the crash crusade and stuff, and he's like, oh, looks like I've got some competition, do I? Well, I'm going to have to go kill their ass. And at the same time, Alima and Ulamukul are like, oh, Exar Kun, we're going to have to go kill his ass. You know, so this leads to the big confrontation of these two. And so Exar Kun arrives on Chorus, confronts Ulic and Alima. Alima's no match for Exar. He immediately he takes her out immediately. It knocks her out, gets her off to the side. And then this is where we have the big confrontation between Ulic and Exar Kun, former Jedi students who are now fully embraced and into the dark side. And they fight fiercely. The fight is just as fierce as it can get. However, as they're fighting, the dark side's growing. They're going at it full force. All of a sudden, their two amulets, because of the amount of dark side they're putting off, the two amulets start responding and glowing from their dark side energy. And because of this, it entices the spirit of none other than Marka Ragnos to appear before them. I told you the shit was all tied together. And just like millennia before, he stood between these two like he did Sadao and Kresh. However, this time these two listened and heard his words. He proclaimed Exar would be the new Lord of the Sith and that Ulic would be his apprentice. And they listened to everything he had to say. Unlike those two, they're like, oh, cool. The two were branded with Sith tattoos on their foreheads to signify their alliance. And the two new Sith Lords begin the Great Sith War. But that's how that happens. So again, all this stuff ties together. The reason I talked about Ragnos and everything that happens, because it just keeps cycling at the Sith, man. They keep cycling and getting to the next generation. This is how they do it, you know? That's why they keep coming back. Because their spirits live on and they wait. And then when someone gets to the dark side, they're like, step in. But that's how powerful their fight was. They were so consumed by the dark side and they were so powerful. They had the amulets. It literally summoned the spirit of Ragnos, who's like, let's try this again. All right, you two, here's the deal. I'm going to lay it out for you. Unlike my two previous dumbasses, we'll see if you guys got what it takes. And to their credit, because unlike those other two, they were fully Sith. These guys were former Jedi. So there was there for them to go, well, I need to listen to this. You know what? Makes sense. Let's put our differences aside. Like those two, we're going to work together and we're going to make it happen. And this starts the Great Sith War. Now, a lot allied with Alima's armies, the two new Sith Lords set out to destroy the Republic and especially the Jedi. They hate the Jedi. They create a new Sith super weapon, the Dark Reaper, and they inflicted near genocidal casualties on worlds like Raxus, Prime. They kind of split up in two forces, Exar with his forces and Ulic with his. Exar was the first one. He used the Sith sorcery to create these things called Terran Tatics. And these were large monstrosities that had one thing and one thing only. They thirst for Jedi blood. And that's their whole purpose. Kill Jedi and drink their blood. He also made an alliance. This is where the Sith and the Mandalorians first allied together. So he gets with the Mandalorians. We talked about them in the Darth Revan episode, but this is their predecessors. And he gets with Mandalore, their leader at the time, Mandalore the Indomitable. And with the Mandos on their side, with all these new creatures I just created, with this new super weapon, with Alima's forces, the Crass forces, they kick the shit out of the Republic. Like, it was a slaughter. They overwhelm defenders like on planets of Fornos, and then, you know, that's what Exar Kun does. And then you got Ulic, who takes the Krath and the Mandos, and they start terrorizing the galaxy. At the same time, our XR. This is how cocky, this is how arrogant this guy was. He went to Osis, where all the Jedi are being trained, right? And he's able to corrupt a bunch of Jedi. Like, you know what? The Jedi suck. Why don't you come with me? And he's so charismatic and stuff that they're like, you know what? The Jedi do suck. Let's go with him. And so he creates all these new dark side followers. One of the ones that was there was the Jedi Credo. Remember, that was the former apprentice of Boss. And he is the one that really helps him scoop up a bunch of Jedi. The other reason that he went there is he was looking for more Sith artifacts. There was a major one on Osis, and it was protected by Odin Ur. And he was the real ancient Jedi who had helped defend and fight in the first great hyperspace war. So the two fought. He defeats Ur, but Ur is really ancient and has just a different way of thinking. He does something I can't believe. And I had to make sure this was correct. As he's getting ready to kill Ur, before he does, he's going to take the holocron. He gets the holocron. Ur declares Kun at this time a Jedi master before his death. He says, yeah, you're a Sith Lord, but you know what? You're so powerful with the Force, and you're taking me down. I grant you the rank of Jedi Master like me, which gave Kun pause, but he was like, what? Completely threw him off. He takes the holocron, but it says something got Kun's brain working a little overtime, so it really messes with Kun. Now, while this is going on in Osis, Ulek's terrorizing the galaxy. They're moving toward, their main thing is to get to Coruscant. Now, Alima does not like this setup. She was the one that was, she's the leader of the craft. She's the queen. But it's Ulek who's in charge. She does not like that at all. And he says, I'm going to attack Coruscant. She's like, I don't think that's a good idea. But he tells her to get bent and decides, I'm going to do it anyway. She was tired of having to share power with Ulek. And as he makes his big push into Coruscant, and he could have won had he not been betrayed by Alima, which he didn't know at the time when it happened. But he goes in with his forces, but she abandons him. You got to have everything you need to go attack Coruscant. He loses. He gets defeated, and he's captured by the Republic forces and the Jedi. And, you know, they decide that he's going to be put on trial. Now, this is how big this was. Ulek's trial was presided over by the actual Supreme Chancellor and the Senate, and he was found guilty of all charges, and he was sentenced to death. So just as they're pronouncing his sentence to death, and they, you know, everyone's like, huzzah, we're going to get justice. Who should show up, right? This is like a month or two later after he gets captured and stuff. Right as he gets his sentence, Exar appears out of nowhere. He walks right into front of everybody. Kills and immobilizes the entire forces, guards, the senators, and immediately executes the Supreme Chancellor. He frees Ulek, and they start making their way out. As they're making their way out so he can free Ulek, his former Master Boss shows up. Now, Kun was now using his new weapon, a double-bladed lightsaber, and the two fought. And this time, he overpowers and kills Boss, who before he dies proclaimed he would return one day to defeat his former apprentice. They escape. Ulek was put back in command, and the Sith continued their war. And then Ulek was informed of Alima's treachery and plot of revenge. And he would get it. He sets her ass up in one of the battles through a trap and treachery that goes on. I don't really want to get into that. Let's just say she goes out because Ulek makes sure she dies. So that's the end of Alima. So questions so far. Are you guys with me? We're still on the same path. Everything's going good. We're good. Everything's good. Here.
So he decimated, you said like he fought Friedenad. Mm-hmm. He decimated him because
he obliterated him out of existence. Destroyed his spirit.
So he can't be a Force ghost or anything.
Nope.
So what did he do with the stick?
No, that's Boss.
That's a different person.
Different person.
I thought Nat had the stick.
No, why would Frida Non had Bass's B-A-S-S stick? The Bass stick. And he's not using a stick this time, he's using a goddamn lightsaber.
But the stick stopped XR Kun, so he should use a stick, right?
I wish I had never shared the stick that he beat his master. I really should have. I've done this myself. I have no one to blame but myself. You know, I assumed that that knowledge would just be just normal, simple knowledge. I was wrong once again. No, there was no stick involved. I knew the stick was going to come back. Yeah. Anybody else? My God.
When's Yoda coming involved?
Right now, he's coming in right now, Cash. Prepare. Here comes your buddy Yoda.
All
right. He travels back 4,000 some years to fight XR Kun.
I knew it.
I mean, everything else in Star Wars is real. Why can't time travel?
So much right now. Moving on. God. So the next big battle, as the battle started raging across the galaxy again, was on the Jedi homeworld of Osus, I think, or Usus, one of the two. I think
Osus. Osus,
yeah.
Not Oasis.
That's the band, the different things. There's some key things that happen here. The Sith, they battle the Jedi during this. Ulic had a brother. His name was Kay. Keldroma. They fought. He was also a Jedi, and he ends up killing his brother. Just as he's killing his brother in the battlefield, Nomi arrives, sees Ulic do this, and she has had enough. He tried to save him, he didn't. He's been doing all this crazy stuff, and Nomi's quite powerful. She can do some battle meditation. There's a lot of things she can do, and her just outrage. Not anger, but outrage that he would do something to his own brother and kill him. She gets consumed with the light side, and a wall of light comes out of her, and she literally cuts Ulic from the Force. Literally takes him out of the Force. Dark side, light side, it don't matter. The Force is gone from Ulic. Which kind of, you know, when you've, you know, if you've ever, like you've been on a drug, and then you get off the drug, and then you go, wait, I've got clarity. Immediately, now that he doesn't have his dark side influences on him, feels the regret of what he's done. Immediately renounces the Sith. And because of the guilt of killing his brother and everything he's done with Nomi, he agrees to help her and the Jedi defeat XR Kun, which he will do. The tide of the battle at that point with Ulic off the without controlling the forces. This is where this battle turns, and the Sith get defeated here. And from this point on, the Sith and the Mando forces were beaten and pushed back. The Mandalorians get defeated, and then they get sent back packing, but they'll come back around to the Darth Revan timeline. XR Kun and the Sith get pushed all the way back to Yavin 4. Now, this puts XR Kun in a tough spot, and he goes for a last-ditch effort. Like, all right, fine. Can't win this way. I'm going to try a different way. So in a last ditch effort, he uses Sith sorcery to drain the life of all of his followers to break free of what he considers his mortal body. He wants to become a Sith spirit that's got no ties to anything. A lot of Sith spirits are tied to certain things. But like Frida Non, he wants to have his spirit become incorporeal so he can go around and continue the war and do other things. At the same time he does this, the Jedi sense this under Nomi, using battle meditation and what she just did with the Force, do a backlash. Now, when these energies collide, it completely destroys most of the life in a giant firestorm that consumes the moon Yavin 4. The backlash, the Jedi win, they get pushed back, but they don't know. They think they killed XR Kun. They don't. His spirit lives on, but is now tied to the temples, the temple where he was near on Yavin 4. And that comes into the storyline thousands of years later, the new Jedi Order. They run into XR Kun for the first time. Thinking he was dead, they leave the planet, and this ends with the help of Ulic. He's the one that helps the forces overcome the Sith. Just, you know, he knew the Mandos. He helps the Jedi defeat them. They get sent packing. Sith, all the bad guys are defeated. Exar Kun is imprisoned. They defeat his ass. He gets trapped on Yavin 4. Like, you know, which was not part of his plan. So he can't do anything unless someone comes and finds him, which nobody ever really does for a while. So all his knowledge and stuff is left there. And then, Ulic and Nomi, their story continues on. But that's how the Great Sith War ends. That's why you had to cover all this stuff, because everything is tied in. Every time, I mean, if we hit our goal, we'll do Mace's lore video next. If we hit our goal here for the Patreons, but we may need a break from, because I haven't even gotten, we're not even halfway through the Sith history. That's just the Great Sith War. That's Exar. That's the Krath. That's Alima. That's Ulic. That's Nomi Sumrider's story. This is everything that goes on in this story. And I'm not even covering the battles. So again, we always cover just the general main point. I'm not talking about the battles or some of the minutiae of the battles or other events that go on, you know, character moments and stuff. The main character plots, the main things that happen is what I want to cover here. So that's the Great Sith War. Your questions, guys, because this is at the time of the stream where we have final thoughts and questions. We'll start with Kashmir first. I don't want to hear anything about the goddamn stick.
What about Yoda?
Yoda was not a part of this, man.
But you said it was coming up. And
I was being ironical.
Fine.
There's no Yoda, no stick.
Did you know Yoda had a walking stick at one point?
All right, moving on. Ram. Should I bother?
So yes. No Yoda and no stick.
Okay, we've established there's no fucking Yoda or stick.
We've already established that, right?
We know.
So where is Mace Windu in this timeline?
All right.
He is still yet to be the seed of some man.
Yeah. And women. Parth, any final thoughts, questions that are not related to Yoda, Mace, or the fucking...
So, shit. I guess one quick question, I guess, just for completion as part of my brain. Does Naomi give Ulic his powers back after
she cuts him off? Yeah, eventually there's a whole storyline of the redemption of Ulic Qel'Drin.
Okay, okay. Yeah,
so he gets...
Because
she doesn't, but he goes to this... There's a whole story with him about someone wants him to teach them, and he does, and he redeems himself in the Force, through the light side. So, yeah, he does eventually, yeah.
Circle back. Yeah, because it was... I'm just racking my head with the memory. I'm like, I'm pretty sure he comes back at some point, but we haven't gotten to that point yet. But that's, you know, back to him being light side, so, you know. What does that matter?
He redeems himself, in the Force. And lives a quiet life, and, you know, him and Nomi, you know, share their life together and stuff. So, yeah. He has a lot of guilt and stuff that he doesn't even want to be a Jedi after the war. He just goes and wants to be a peaceful life. He has so many regrets. Like, you know, he's been through a lot. He's been through a lot of war. So there's a lot of trauma there and things. And now that he's tied off from the Force, he's not being consumed by the dark side, doesn't even have the Force anymore, you know, gives him time to reflect and things, which leads into the story of his redemption.
Cool. Let's see. Outside of that, what else was my other question? Exar Kun being left a Manon. There's an unrelated planet to him being left on Yavin. Does he still end up like having like some sort of like control over the Manasi warriors that are left there?
I thought that he did,
but
well, he just wiped them out. The ones that survive, they still do their thing where they're just there. They always guard the temples and stuff. I don't remember. I'd have to go back and look at like where they end up.
Because it's like they don't really exist by the time, you know, of course we're talking thousands of years later, but
They the still exist because they come back. Because remember the Old Republic with Darth Revan and stuff. They're still there. So
well, yeah,
they
but
survive,
I mean, like,
but I don't.
But
they're
by
still
the time we get to the rebel, by the time we get to the rebel time frame, I mean they're not existent. Otherwise, why would we? They have. I mean, the relics are there.
I think some of them are, but they get so mutated through the dark side, they just become like monsters.
They kind of like pull back from people and
stuff like that. Okay. I mean, I'll have to do a whole thing about them, but because
they were crazy badass warriors. Like,
yeah. And
they wreck things.
Yeah. I mean, they were created by Sadal. I mean, they were brought there to be the guardians of these temples. Have you never seen the Yavin 4 is kind of like an Inca Aztec kind of looking, you know, pyramids kind of structures you've seen in episode 4. And if you've seen the artwork, that's kind of what it looks like. It's a jungle planet. So which is perfectly fine for them. But the dark side corrupts them so much that they become different things. But at this point, they weren't at that point. And I don't think they were even through Darth Revan and everybody starts back up there again. They're always there though. They survive and they rebuild and they do their thing. And they still do their purpose. They just guard the temples. And anybody that's strong on the dark side, they will, if they're the Lord of the Sith, they will bow down and, you know, support their efforts. I mean, Exar Kun was so powerful. They just said like, yep, you're it, buddy.
Yeah. All right. Cool. I think that's kind of all I had on those guys. I as you started talking about the story, it kind of came back to my head. But actually, the one thing about Exar Kun that I think didn't get quite enough attention brought to him is he was one of the first Jedi to create a double-bladed lightsaber.
Yeah, it had been out Sith. There. Yeah, it had been out there. They the Sith long ago had created, you know, double-bladed weapons, but he was the first one that really used it, and his was very unique to him. And mastered the form of using a double bladed. Most did not. You know, a lot of Sith used Sith swords, and the Jedi just used single bladed weapons.
And then on top of that, he never bled his kyber crystal, right?
I don't know.
He always had it as the original color that he got from when he was a Jedi.
Yeah, I don't think his. You know, I'd have to look at what his color was. I don't think he ever. Yeah, I don't think he did.
Which is kind of it's just
because the artwork I've seen of them, he's always had a blue double bladed lightsaber. I don't think he ever had one.
Yeah, that's why I find these two Sith like particularly interesting, because one full on redeems himself through some very unconventional means, and the other one like walks a really weird path in the dark side. Like he commits to it, but like part of him like never like fully embraces every like aspect of the Sith. And it's interesting to see how they play out in the long run.
Characters
and their interactions with being, you know, I mean, massive influence on the Sith storyline, but then still having like a very unique path from what we've heard up until this point, where everything is like, you know, lust for power, betrayal, die from apprentice, the cycle continues on, and they both kind of have like very unique paths through this process that don't involve, you know, the tropes, which is interesting.
Yeah, their two stories are fascinating because they come together because of the dark side, but for different paths. You know, Ulrich fell to the dark side because he wanted to, you know, with what he was doing. Exar Kun was just a power. He was a maniac, arrogant, cocky. They both believed that they could use the dark side, but they were doing it for different reasons. Exar Kun just wanted it so he could become more powerful. Ulrich was using it so he could defeat those that he thought needed to be defeated. But it both consumed them. You just cannot not be consumed by the dark side, especially the more you use it. It will, you have to fully embrace it. And once you do, like Yoda says, consume you, it will. Easier, more seductive. But they thought because they were powerful Jedi that you know, they could control that they could understand the dark side and control it. But they didn't have the knowledge like the ancient Jedi did, you know, with balance. Mm-hmm. They weren't trying for balance. They weren't understanding that balance and control are part of the same specter. Yeah, you can have the dark side, understand it and all that stuff, but if you use it the way they were doing it, it's going to consume you. You know, you can think all the shit you want, but yeah, it both sent them down the dark path, and once it took over, they were committed. You know, once Ragnos made his appearance, they were like, let's go. And boy did they ever. I mean, the galaxy was torn to shreds because of this, and it took them a long time to recover, which will lead us into Vitiate. who was just sitting back this whole time, just enjoying everything that he was seeing happen, because he was getting ready to make his big move. Because this gets into the previous video we talked about with Darth Revan, but Vitiate was the mastermind that had been around this entire time, building up the Sith Empire, you know, not the Sith Empire these other idiots were trying to create, but he was just sitting there going, this is good. This is good stuff. This is going to make what I, when I come in, that much easier. So yeah.
Yes.
All right. Anybody else? That anything not related, Ram, Kashmir, from Mace, Yoda, or goddamn Sticks?
How pissed off was Anakin that this guy just became a master, got the rank of master, just for being strong?
He wasn't alive, so he didn't care about it.
What I meant is, how pissed off do you think he would have been?
Had he known?
Yeah, had he known. Like, you could just become rank of master just for being strong.
I didn't get into the details of why. And that guy, that Jedi Master, he's really interesting Jedi Master. He's got like a Lobus kind of, he doesn't have, he's like a tentacle kind of creature. If you've seen a picture of he's really interesting, but he's the keeper of all the lore and stuff there, right? Holocrons, other knowledge and stuff. Like, he's like the big librarian, exceptionally powerful in the Force. But you know, Exar Kun came in, dominated, and they fought hard, but I mean, he realized, like, this guy's really powerful on the dark side, but god damn, this guy's a Jedi Master. You know, he didn't think about it in those terms. Like, he just said, you know what, you are Jedi Master. You know, that's, yeah, you're Jedi Master, man. I give you the rank. So Exar Kun was the first one that was granted the title Jedi Master and Sith Lord. That's how powerful Exar Kun was. He was phenomenally powerful. And he didn't care, man. The Force was to him was the Force. He liked the dark side shit for sure. But he'd use whatever it took. I mean, he didn't care. If it was the light side power and it helped him, great. If it was the dark side power, help him, even better. You know, so, yeah. It was just an interesting little tidbit. I'm like, he did grant him the rank of master? What the hell? But he was a strange creature. But it's part of the storyline. I just thought that was an interesting little tidbit. All right, any final thoughts?
So I'm starting to see a trend here.
Yes.
Right, I'm starting to see a trend that the most powerful Sith are former Jedi, which just further asserts my position. Palpatine is a bitch.
Why?
Because he's not a former Jedi. So he's not nearly as powerful as Anakin or Exar Kun or Revan.
Yeah, he's more powerful.
Or Malak or any of these other guys.
Oh, Palpatine's on a different level. There's two Sith I put as power levels above all these guys, and that's Vitiate and Palpatine. For different reasons. Their knowledge of the dark side and the shit that they could do was just ridiculous. Absolutely. And when we get into Vitiate and the stuff that he does in the next show, in the next Saga of the Sith, part 3, I guess we'll call it, you're going to be like, he did what? he pulled what off? So yeah, I mean, Vitiate was ridiculous.
And those two Sith specifically had a very different take on what it meant to be a Sith Lord, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Because they were much more in the scheming side of things and having massive plans that they weren't like frontline battles of. Like, the Sith that get betrayed all the time are the ones that are like frontline warriors. They get betrayed all the time because the opening to do so is far more commonplace versus betraying the guy back at the Emperor's Towers.
Yeah, I mean,
a little bit more well-guarded.
Yeah. And we'll get into their stories and what makes them so unique to any of the Sith that ever existed. They are the cream of the crop. And they are actually both culminations of both of their timeline, even though they're separated by thousands of years. Vitiate was the culmination of everything that led up to him. We're going to get to his backstory and what made him so incredibly... He was exceptionally powerful in the Force and the dark side, like one of the most powerful that has ever existed. And he was a culmination of watching, learning, looking. He was hyper-intelligent, and so he used, you know, scheming and putting many plots in place. Palpatine was the culmination of 1,000 years of the Sith, sitting in the background, learning, acquiring power, setting everything up. Vitiate, both Palpatine. There's a lot of correlation between Vitiate and Palpatine. We're both emperors. You know, that's the tie in too. Both of them were emperors at the time. So there you go. All right. Any final thoughts? Okay. With that, we're going to end this lore series. So thank you guys for watching this. If you like this, then by all means, please leave comments on the video. We'll upload this on YouTube here soon. And if you do, hit the thumbs up, subscribe, recommend it to other folks. We love comments on the lore video. Give your thoughts on some of this stuff. Again, if I get something wrong, I don't care. I'm just doing general stuff and just trying to get the main points to teach these guys something about these characters and things. So, if you want to get into the minutiae detail, you can say something in the comment. You're more than welcome. I mean, the more they can learn, the better. So then they're not just talking about sticks and other nonsense. So everyone have a great rest of your day. Appreciate you guys being here, and may the force be with you.